So what I'm going to try to do is, this is more, so I'm not with the Baltimore City Health Department anymore. I just started a doctorate program at Berkeley. So a lot of this is going to be what I did in Baltimore. Starting back in early 2009, I was hired to basically bring social determinants to Baltimore City. It's one of the oldest continuously operating health departments, but they have not had a social determinants health equity platform. So, and can people hear me? Am I good? Yeah, it's not that many people on here. So this is going to be more of a, I'm usually like showing like correlations and all this fancy stuff, and it's exciting and it's interesting, and I feel like this one is more of a story, a process about how I kind of carved out a niche for social determinants of health equity at the Baltimore City Health Department. So with that, some of the pictures throughout here are pictures I've taken around Baltimore. I feel like as a social epidemiologist, it's important for us that we have our third-person quantitative data, but we also kind of ground truth some of the things that we're finding in our data sets. And so I think that some of the projects I've done with Photo Voice, for example, I think it's really important that when we talk about our data and our work, that it's not just third-person bird's-eye view, that in some capacity we're trying to make it real, make it visual. So some of the pictures in here are from some work I've done in that capacity. So with that said, I have no conflicts to disclose. So I usually like to start off my presentations with music, but because I probably have about five times more slides than I actually have time for, I know I can't really play a song right now and still finish. I might never finish without the song. So instead I have a quote from a Paul Newman song that was covered by Nina Simone back in 1978 called Baltimore. Some of you might have heard it. I'm not going to sing it. So if you haven't heard it, I just look it up on your fancy phone or something. But the quote that I think stands out to me is that this song was written in 1978. And here we are over 30 years later. In the last couple lines, left the chorus, or the first verse, I think, and the people hide their faces and they hide their eyes because the city's dying and they don't know why. I think this is pretty powerful. I think that if you look at what was going on during the time the song was written, look at it right now, I would argue that not a whole lot has changed, and some of the conditions have actually gotten worse in terms of the inequities, the gap in the inequities in the within the city. So something I think about is this question here, and they don't know why, this statement. I find this to be really problematic. I think it's 2011. We've had so much research adding up, and I think that this right here is something we have to really take a closer look at, figuring out why that is, and that was kind of like the charge that I was given when I got hired. So to start with, there's a broad social determinants overview, and this is kind of like the data you usually see. It's broad, it's macro, but it really doesn't reveal much about the nuances of place and space that really determine health opportunities within a city and even within states and nations and continents even. Life expectancy by place, life expectancy by community, socioeconomic status, and avertible deaths by place. And this is something I'll describe in a couple moments. So generally, the World Health Organization has a commission on social determinants. They had a big report that came out about 3 years ago, and basically they're saying that, the social determinants are mostly responsible, change social determinants, and you will make dramatic improvements in health equity. There's no reason that there should be a 20-year gap of life expectancy between people within the same country. Analysis that we've done in Baltimore and that I've done updated as of earlier this year and late last year is that there's a 20-year gap, about a 21-year gap now, in life expectancy between communities in the same city that are less than 5 miles apart. So, for example, you have in northern Baltimore a neighborhood where life expectancy is 84, and just 4 miles, about 4.5 miles down the road, life expectancy is about 64. So this, for me, I'm looking at this, I'm like, well, why? They're hiding their faces, the city's dying, they don't know why. I'm trying to figure this question out why, basically. Another way to look at this, and I think this is like my favorite slide of the whole thing because it really stands out for me anyway. On the left is the Roland Park neighborhood, life expectancy 84. Moving to the right, U.S. current, it's 80. I got this from the Human Development Index from the United Nations. I've seen estimates between 78.5 and 80. I went with the 81 just to, yay. Maryland currently, the last I saw was 76. Baltimore City was 72, which is about what the life expectancy was in the U.S. back in 1970. So Baltimore City itself is about 40 years behind the rest of the country on average. The purple bars on this graph are Baltimore-specific neighborhoods. And as you can see there's some of them that are basically equivalent to life expectancy in Iraq, equivalent to life expectancy in Bolivia, and a couple that are equivalent to countries in Sub-Saharan and West Africa. The highlight I'd like to make here is the far right of the graph. Actually, I could move this mouse right. Nice. Okay, so this is going to be useful. Holland's market, life expectancy 64, is basically about what life expectancy was in the United States back in 1940. So about 70 years ago, the average American overall was living as long as the average resident in this Baltimore neighborhood. If you look at this on a community socioeconomic level, people have probably seen this before, the social gradient of health, as it's usually termed. The green bars represent income as you move from lower income. Oops. Oh, wow. As you move from left to right, you see as neighborhood income increases, life expectancy increases, there's a gap of about 9 years between the lowest income and the highest income neighborhood. The purple bars here represent community educational attainment, here defined as the percent of adults that have at least a bachelor's degree or higher. And you can see the similar gradient as you would expect, education, income, they're highly correlated, right? The reason I put this on here is because there was an assistant commissioner at the health department back in 1957 that did similar work and looked at life expectancy by neighborhood class, basically income, and found a 6-year gap. When I updated this analysis, it's now a 10-year gap between the lowest and the highest, the best and the worst off, I guess. And it's interesting that, you know, that in this context, this is 1957, and this data was not updated, at least as far as I could find in the records, until about 2009. And so I'm just wondering how we can do analysis like this, and we're still looking at the same things. Again, going back to the Nina Simone song, it's been 30 years since that song was written, and I feel like it was written 3 days ago. Another way to kind of summarize health status, this map here shows avertible deaths by CSA. CSA is Community Statistical Area. It's basically an aggregate of 2 or 3 census tracts that try to match existing predefined neighborhood boundaries. The orange areas here are different neighborhoods, the CSAs, that are the best off in terms of their income and their life expectancy. What this map shows is that if you apply the age and gender-specific mortality rates to the rest of the neighborhoods in Baltimore, the shading of the purple represents the percentage of deaths that would have been avoided had they had the same mortality rates as the best-off neighborhoods. And as you can see, it goes quite a range, but the highest is 60.4% in a neighborhood that is just 3 blocks from the top med school of public health in the country, Johns Hopkins. So top school of public health on the planet, but 3 blocks away, you have a situation like this. So again, I'm thinking, well, what's going on? I need to answer some of these questions. Back to the quote by the assistant commissioner. Inspection of these indices indicates that there is a direct, consistent relationship between life expectancy at birth and social economic position. Yes, good observation. This has been kind of verified going back to Virchow and Engels and Chadwick and all these other studies in the 1800s. 1957, it happened in Baltimore. It was published. Follow-up of the quote, there would seem to be a reason to ascertain causes which best account for these differentials. I would completely agree with this, and that's basically what I sought out to do. So, why and how? In 2008, the first Baltimore City Neighborhood Health Profiles came out. They were excellent in so many ways, but one of the shortcomings is that all it was death and disease. It was just mortality rates, who died from what, where, by how much. Nothing in there about why they were dying. When the profiles were released, the mayor had an initiative out called the Neighborhood Ambassadors Program, and there's a Health Ambassadors Program that basically made it all about personalized individual behavior, eat more, exercise, all this good stuff that we're used to hearing, right? The usual public health inadequacy, I guess. I've found that pretty problematic, of course. And so in the process of going out sharing these neighborhood health profiles, I would talk to people and kind of get feedback, and I realized that this wasn't really helpful at all. We're just telling people that, you know, your heart disease is 3 times higher in your neighborhood than another neighborhood. That's not really helping them out very much. And it was pretty clear that we needed some indicators that really spoke to things that people could take action on and actually actively modify civic engagement, opportunities to basically move away from individual responsibility and into collective, government accountability for the conditions that people were living, working in, playing in, et cetera. So I began collecting different various sets of data, quite a tedious task, in the summer of 2009. Had a full complement of indicators by April 2010. And the key part of this was having relationships. I was kind of new in 2009, so I had to really like figure out how I can get my hands on all this data, right? So my colleague Lisa Ames at the time was really helpful. She had connections at the Baltimore Neighborhood Indicators Alliance and Center for Livable Future, Baltimore Gas and Electric, et cetera. So it really made it possible for me to find some data that had never been analyzed. So in a broad areas, I set out to really pull together data for that up to the time that I did it had never been examined in Baltimore City by the health department in terms of community assessment and planning. Some of the food environment indicators, corner store density, fast food density, carryout density, which is like the chicken box, fried chicken type of establishments, supermarket proximity, and also vehicle ownership. So having an idea of the food environment, so when we talk about obesity, we're putting into a real-life context and not just assuming so many things about the population. Another area was the housing environment, Baltimore gas and electric energy cutoffs for non-payment, lead paint violations, rodent and insect complaints, so people calling in complaining if they have pests in their households, and also the percent of residents that are housing burdened, so paying more than 30% of their household income on housing expenses. Built environment indicators, again, in the context of obesity, you really can't talk about obesity if you're not talking about the food environment and the built and social environment, as the mechanisms of eating and diet and habit and physical activity are really constrained or promoted by these factors. So vacant buildings, vacant lots, liquor stores, tobacco stores, and complaints of dirty streets and alleys. The social environment, and I feel really bad, and I'm actually, you know, I feel like I want to take this off because I don't know if anyone has a problem with this, but I kind of do, but the social environment, we don't really have good measures of like social capital, social cohesion, right? And so it's like when you're capturing the social environment, the only way to usually do it is by putting like up deficits, right? Sometimes you can use like the number of community associations, which I don't think is a necessarily solid measure, but I wish we had better measures at the population level in Baltimore, but all we had to really work with that I could find was non-fatal shootings, homicide incidents, so the location of the murder as opposed to where the person was from, because I think there's two different things you're assessing there. Domestic violence based on 911 call rates and juvenile arrest rates. And for education, kindergarten readiness scores, this is one of the top indicators, not specifically this indicator, but one of the top areas by the World Health Organization is basically early childhood development and assessing their opportunity to learn and really social economic mobility. Third and eighth grade reading proficiency scores, elementary, middle school, and high school absenteeism, and the percent of adults with a bachelor's degree or higher. And so all of these indicators, the data was there for I don't know how long before I got there, but they had never been analyzed before, and I thought that was kind of disturbing. But what I found out to be more kind of curious and interesting is that all these what we call these kind of structural social determinants, social terms of health, is that in most local jurisdictions that none of them are actually under the control of the health department. So the health department is supposed to be promoting the health of a city, and they're not even assessing indicators that are basically driving the health outcomes. So for me, this is like a very serious flaw with local public health practice. For me, there's really no way you can talk about promoting health of a community on the local level and not really entertain these issues. So upon the realization that this is the condition, I realized that I needed to really link these into policies and really get other agencies involved here, because it's other agencies that are really shaping the opportunities and the structures for health in the city. So this idea of health or equity in all policies, that basically every policy has the ability to impact health outcomes directly or indirectly, affecting on operating through explicit health policies like vaccine policies or under social determinant-related policies like housing, right? So I did a policy review of 2008-2009 Baltimore City Council, all policies that went through City Council, to identify policies that had a potential to impact health, either directly or indirectly. Does anybody want to guess, just a wild guess, how many of the total policies with the ability to impact health were reviewed for health consequences? Anyone? Throw something out. What is it? 5%? Say what?
Zero.
No, that's not that bad. I mean, give you a little bit of credit. So about 15% were actually referred to the health department for them to review and comment on about health issues. 85% were missed, and some of these are very, very key for example, obesity. Policies that related to the distribution and the concentration of liquor stores, food outlets, a lot of zoning and land use policies. Another way to look at it, and I don't know if you guys have like participated in the Halloween activities, but I didn't get a chance to watch any scary movies, but I think that when I see this slide here, I kind of get a little apprehensive about that. For me, this is a scary movie. This is a very scary movie here. When you see that the governance of a city is not necessarily taking all the measures that necessarily could be, and I would argue should be, to promote and protect the health of its residents, that you have 85% of these potentially health-affecting policies that are basically just being passed and voted on and approved without really thinking about the long-term consequences. A few examples of the key missed opportunities. Bike-safe street gates. So Baltimore City, they have, like, you know, the water drains on the streets, and they tend to kind of go with the flow of traffic. So if you're riding your bike, your wheel gets stuck in it, and that whole thing happens. Bike lanes, these are pretty obviously explicitly health-related, but they were not really reviewed or commented on, right? So if we have a bunch of bike lanes, and not surprisingly, they mostly go through the higher, more developed, commercially viable neighborhoods, right? So in the context of inequities, we're kind of like stacking the odds against closing our neck if we get, because all the bike lanes are not where they, you would think that they really need to be to create physical activity opportunities, right? A few other examples, and you can just kind of read them quickly. Liquor store classification and land use, protection of city streets, city trees, liquor stores near schools and churches, public bus transfers for school children, lighting quality, a few things that are pretty critical in many ways. So these results were shared with the Baltimore City Council president at the time and her staff. The staff recommended having a city council training briefing for the staff so that when they get policies on their desk, they can kind of go through like a little checklist, kind of like the healthy development measurement tool from San Francisco. My former colleague, Shannon Cosgrove, and I kind of developed something of that nature to facilitate that process for Baltimore. Didn't get very far with it. It wasn't really one of those things that people were excited about. Drafting health equity guidance documents for the staff, council resolutions or hearings, and also increasing monitoring policy. So instead of me being the only person at the health department doing this on top of 12 other things, actually carving out a niche for this to continuously operate. Fortunately, or unfortunately, however you want to look at it, that same city council president became mayor just a few months later because the current mayor at the time got kicked out of office for corruption. So, and come to find out in retrospect, I wasn't supposed to be meeting with public officials without permission. So this whole HIA health and all policies conversation that ended up becoming one of the mayor's key things for the health department probably would have never happened had I known about that role and respected it. But I think that had I known about it, I probably still would have gone ahead with the conversation. So got really lucky with this one here. Made a little breakthrough. I don't feel bad because the first thing that came out of the health department when the city council president became mayor was the 2010 health disparities report card that I wrote. And I was aiming to basically capture the level of health inequities in the city in one report. And I figured that in order for people to really pay attention, you got to make it provocative. So I assigned letter grades for the level of disparity. So just a couple months after the new mayor's in office, this is what was on like the front page of the newspaper, was Baltimore City gets a D for health disparities. Very provocative, very out there, drew attention to it, and basically created this immediate need for accountability. Somebody has to answer questions for this. So health disparities became a very prominent thing on her agenda. Kind of as a result. One minute. I know I had too many slides. So fast forwarding, calling for help in all policies in this in the report card, and multi-agency collaboration that's kind of permanent, right? In the process of this, shortly after the report card, I started sharing some of the data. So some of the data on the food environment, the composite ranking of the food environment factors here. The darker the purple you see here on the map, the lower the quality of the food environment. Factoring corner stores, fast food restaurants, what else, carryouts, things of that nature. It was also used to plan the Baltimore Virtual Supermarket, Baltimore program, which is you go to the library or your groceries there if you live in a food desert. It's also used to do youth photo voice projects, and some of the pictures that the youth taken were turned into postcards, and basically so they can write a little comment, mail in their council member. Alcohol environment was being used for considering alcohol use, land use density in the new Baltimore zoning code. Housing, there's a lot of work going on with public housing residents to kind of look at the housing consequences of poor, low-quality housing in Baltimore City. And also tobacco, this was also used for community-based projects to really look at the effects of tobacco density in neighborhoods. So all this data that basically had never been previously analyzed, basically becoming very useful. And I can just skip to the end here. July 2010, we had an internal memo signed by the health commissioner at the time to basically make this a priority for the health department, that a commitment for it, the mayor's asking for it, so now we're going to make this like something that we do on a permanent basis. And unfortunately, or fortunately, however you look at it, a month later we got a new health commissioner. And so I just managed to kind of carve out a niche in the transition report I turned into the health commissioner, essentially reiterating calling for all these things that were in the health disparities report card in the previous memo. And fortunately, she's adopted a few of them, the health and all policies thing specifically, and the permanent interagency task force to really look at health disparities. And so that work is still continuing. The next big thing to just wrap up real quick is the 2011 or 2010 or 2012 neighborhood health profiles. So all this work that I've been doing in the last 2 years was really designed to be put into the neighborhood health profiles with neighborhood level measures of social determinants that people can kind of mobilize and take action around. But they've been delayed since October 2010. They're still not released yet. And so I got an email yesterday saying they might be released sometime soon. So I'm hoping I finally get to see the results of my work. And I'll just go ahead and leave it at that.